Yes, indeed. On this Saturday morning, I am joined not but one, but two good folks from the University of Minnesota. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi are back. We're really going to be talking about lawns and gardens, if you can believe that, on January 6th. Lawns and gardens. And like some folks say, literally, we're going to be talking about lawns and gardens. Good morning, both Julie and John. Nice to have you here on this Saturday.
Hey, Denny. Good to hear you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, and to you guys, too.
Yeah, good morning.
I want to alert John and Julie that last week I indeed finished dormant seeding. Finally.
Yeah.
I don't recall. We've had so many questions about that over the last 2 or 3 months. I don't think I've ever seen so many questions on the show about dormant seeding. I'm not sure if people just wanted to hear about it or learn more about it or what. But, John, we finally got in, Julie, some snow covering. It looks like, according to the National Weather Service, we might get less than half an inch today and less than half an inch overnight. But, boy, we need that snow, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
we're still playing catch up.
Yeah.
It's a great insulator. Even that little bit helps.
And I wonder too that although the forecast is calling for colder temperatures, maybe more accurately, more average temperatures for this time of year, highs in the teens, maybe even a little below average. But you call it an insulation factor there, and I'm looking around my yard and the shrubs and everything, and I thought, well, it's kind of bare out there. What can happen if we don't get that?
So snow is an excellent insulator. It's mostly made of air. About 90% of our snowfall is air, and in those air pockets, it's 32 degrees. So don't ask me how they measured that. That's pretty interesting. But it actually acts as almost like a poor man's mulch if you don't have something covering your soil. So we really look forward to having snow, and it helps to protect and moderate soil temperatures and protect the roots of plants. Roots go dormant a lot slower than our buds and stems and branches do. So it's it's important to get our snowfall, our regular snowfall. Last year was a bumper crop of snow.
Yeah.
But this year is, we're really scrambling for that. So hopefully people have left the leaves on their garden beds and have mulched with wood mulch around the base of their trees and shrubs. And that works great, too. It helps to hold in soil moisture and then moderate those soil temperatures, which makes it a lot easier on our plants.
And John, I'm thinking if indeed, I mean, we're not getting a lot of snow, at least not this particular week, it looks like. But if warmer temperatures do come back, low 30s with sunshine and there is some melting, and let's say we see our lawns again, I know we're going to get questions. Can people still do some seeding?
Yeah, the beauty of the dormant seeding is that it can really be done any time between now and when soil temperatures get up above 40 or 45 degrees. So because at that point, that's when you're starting to get germination. But you want to, the whole thought process behind the dormant seeding or frost seeding, as some people call it, is really just trying to take advantage of that natural freeze-thaw cycle that happens over the winter and early spring to just naturally work that seed down into the soil. So you don't have to do any kind of soil disturbance. You're just kind of counting on that precipitation and that freeze-thaw cycle to get really good seed-to-soil contact that's so critical for seedlings to germinate.
You know, you and Julie, John, talk, and I've heard it over years on the show, that as far as soil differences, let's look at the state of Minnesota. How different are the soils, let's say, from northern Minnesota to southern Minnesota? Are there that vast of differences?
Yeah, Minnesota is a really unique state because there's probably about 7 or 8 different zones within Minnesota. I mean, there's probably a dozen different soil types, but there's 7 distinct growing zones for several different types of plants, and one of those factors that's affected those soils is just the climate over the last several thousand years. So that's what's formed those soils. And so as a result, you know, there is some differences, but, you know, fundamentally the, you know, air and soil temperatures and precipitation amounts are going to be equally as important to that. But when we're concerned about soil types, most of the time for growing plants, we're most concerned if it's a really organic soil, if it's really high organic matter, like a swamp or a marsh, or if it's a really sandy soil, you know, those are typically found in the sand plains. But then much of the rest of the state is fairly consistent in just crudely being broken down into mineral soils, which is where most of our agriculture is at.
All right. Interesting. Here's our phone number. It's also our text number, and you know how busy we tend to get. So if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, now's your chance to ask Julie or John those questions. 651-461-9226. You can call if you like, or just send a text if that's easier. 651-461-9226. Julie, I know it's here we are in January, brand new year. What's going on at the Arboretum?
So out at the Arboretum.
Julie, I know it's here we are in January, brand new year. What's going on at the Arboretum?
So out at the Arboretum, it is still a fabulous place to visit. We have a winter wellness fair that's starting on January 13th, and this is kind of designed to help you find nourishment for your body, mind, and soul all in one place. So we have a wide variety of vendors and activities out there for folks. Also, it's still a lovely place to visit to see plants. We have some really amazing collections. Some of the cedars are looking terrific. We also have paper birch that stands out. You get to see these plants that actually have terrific winter interest, and that's an important part of choosing plants for your landscape any time of the year. You want to have something that's going to be interesting in your landscape throughout the entire year. So that's a kind of a strategy for creating a really interesting landscape. We also have a lot of great indoor plants, too. We have our flower show, but that's starting in February, I believe. So take a look at the website. It is arb.umn.edu. And remember that you do need to get reservations and tickets. So jump on the website and get those. And, boy, enjoy yourself out there. It's really a fabulous place to be.
It really is, and it's very easy to access that website, and it, compared to years ago when it was so busy with, you know, parking and all of that,
right.
So this makes it so easy. I say that all the time, but it makes a big difference with, you know, cut back on the frustration on that level. So it's a great place.
Yeah, less waiting in line.
Absolutely. All right. Tell you what, I'm getting a signal here. We need to take a little bit of a break. Let's invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your chance to ask Julie or John those very questions. 651-461-9226. You can call or text right now. In the Twin Cities, we gained 1 degree in the last hour. It is currently 29 degrees. We are on our way today, probably the warmest day of the week, near 34 degrees. Maybe a half an inch or less of snow today, and maybe overnight about the same. Stay with us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning once again. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions this morning. For Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the University of Minnesota, talking lawns and gardens, and we're getting those very questions via the
All
text.
Right.
But we're getting a phone call, too. Richard is on the horn, I think, calling from Minnetonka this morning. Richard, thanks for waiting. What's your question, please?
Sure. I have a front lawn that's quite thin, at least in half of it, and the winter seeding sounds like a good idea to me. My question is, what specific kind of seed should I use on my Minnetonka lawn?
Great question. So if you have a little bit more shade in the thin area, then I would consider planting something with fine fescue, or made up mostly of the fine fescues. It's a group of five different species of turf grass. If it is just I think fine fescue is great for most lawns, but if you have a little bit more traffic, if it's thin because you have kids or pets or anything like that, maybe you want to consider adding in a little bit of tall fescue or Kentucky bluegrass. But all turf grass species work really well with a dormant seeding. I would just kind of match it based on what the current site conditions are.
You know, we've talked about the types of seeds, like you're mentioning, John, but John and Julie, what about when you purchase seeds from either big box stores or local garden centers? I mean, we do have seeds kind of that are locally sourced, right? I mean, and we get seeds from all over the country, Oregon, things like that. What's the best to use, would you think?
Well, the keys, we're actually just getting ready to publish a new web page on our website for four tips on how to purchase great grass seed. But the things to look out for are just to make sure that you're buying actual grass seed and you're getting what you pay for. So we recommend not buying coated seed, buying seed that is just the seed itself. It doesn't have any extra synthetic coating to help it germinate or to help it save water or anything like that. A lot of times those provide little benefit to homeowners. So the thing is just you can go to most garden centers. We do have a link on our webpage on where to purchase grass seed. You could just web search for purchasing grass seed in Minnesota, and we have a link on all of the vendors that we know of that sell premium grass seed, especially the fine fescues or bee lawn mixes. That's a relatively up-to-date list. Again, that's purchasing grass seed, and you can find that. That's actually at the TURF webpage, turf.umn.edu. There's a link up at the top that says just purchase grass seed.
And we have great garden centers that sell great grass seed. I know I've been to a few of them myself. It makes a big difference. Here's an interesting question. Texter says, will mice eat the grass seed you lay down now?
I would be more worried about birds than I would be mice.
Yeah.
And that's one of the potential pitfalls of dormant seeding is that, that seed is sitting on the surface and exposed if we don't get any snow. One thing that I like to do is I like to seed a little bit now before we get our first major snowfall and then come back through in any kind of thin areas if there's some areas I didn't get to or anything like that, just in real late winter, early spring, in that February, March, if we get any snowfall or if any of the snow melts and you have some bare spots you want to hit, that's a great time to do it as well.
Very good. 651-461-9226 for your lawn or garden questions for Julie or John. This texter says this, our ground is complete clay, hard as a rock. What's good dormant seeding for that, along with lots of shade, too, they add?
Well, the shade is probably much more of a limiting factor than the clay. Unfortunately, a lot of new sites, whenever they build a new home, they scrape off the topsoil, they sell it, or they move it somewhere else. And a lot of new sites are trying to establish lawn and landscaping plants on essentially the subsoil. So that's a really common problem to see. As far as the grass species, like I mentioned, the shade is a much more limiting factor, and I would be, because all grasses can grow on relatively high clay content, so I would focus on that as a problem, and because of that, I would plant the fine fescues or turf-type tall fescue if you have a little bit more traffic because of kids or pets or anything like that, but the fine fescues work are the most shade-tolerant grass that I would recommend there.
Julie, it's hard to believe that here we are in January already,
yes.
And usually you and I, when we talk, and some of your colleagues, we talk about, well, what are we doing here in the middle of the winter? Are seed catalogs coming out yet?
Oh, yes, they certainly are. So as people are looking for and thinking about the coming spring, be looking through those seed catalogs and deciding, what worked last year and maybe what you want to try this year. So those are Always exciting to see the photos, the new varieties and cultivars that are coming out. And be sure to visit your local garden centers, too. As the weather warms up and we get closer to spring, you're going to be seeing transplants and new shrubs and trees that are available. And talk with your garden center people. I always say form a relationship with your garden center because they can clue you into some of the newer varieties, newer cultivars, some of the research and evaluation that's been done on those plants, and help you make some really science-based decisions.
And couple that along with the University of Minnesota Extension website, and I'm thinking of the times I've looked for trees or shrubs,
right,
and visiting the Arboretum to see, actual growth. Is this going to look good right next to my house, or did I plant that tree too close to the house? Things like that. So there's some great resources, the U of extension.umn.edu or the Arboretum. We'll talk more about those as we move through this hour. Let's take a break, see what that weather forecast looks like for this coming week. Stay with us. Call us, text us, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here and glad of it every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, answering your lawn and garden questions, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M. We're talking lawns and gardens as usual. And Julie and John, we have callers and we have texters both. Let's see how many folks we can help out here. Charlie's first up. You're calling from Kimball, Minnesota, I do believe. Charlie, what's your question this morning?
Yeah, hi. Right now, with the weather as it is, without any snow, living in the country, we're all starting to get a little worried about our septic systems freezing. And what I'm asking, John, is we're looking for straw hay bales to kind of insulate. So I'm wondering what is the least destructive way to distribute that without damaging my grass in the spring? Should I have put down a layer of plastic before the straw and then the bales, or what would be the best possible way?
Charlie, you're thinking about trying to insulate the ground to keep it from freezing?
Yes. If we don't get any snow soon, then that's kind of a concern around my neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure on how to answer that. Julie, do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think I know that in the past, or John, and you could probably weigh in on this too, but that if as long as there's something planted on the soil, like turf, it actually acts as an insulator for the soil. If you had bare soil on top of your septic mounds or your septic systems, then it would be much more concerning because I remember back in, it was January of 2022, the soil temperature of bare soil was zero, and the soil temperature of a soil with sod on it was 41 degrees, and the air temperature that day was minus 24 degrees. So just having some kind of growth that's on the soil is helpful. Now, I'm not a septic expert. We do have septic experts at the University of Minnesota. So if you visit our extension site at extension.umn.edu and type in septic systems, there may be some information there about septic systems and protecting them from excessive cold.
All right, very good. Good info. Thank you, Charlie. Let's grab another call, then we'll get back to the text messages. Mary is phoning in from Woodbury this morning. Thanks, Mary. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling because in the fall, it seemed in a kind of a patch of our front yard that does have some shade from kind of an evergreen and a birch tree, but the grass would pull up like there was absolutely no root system left. And so I'm kind of guessing maybe it's grub worms, but how do we know? And if so, what do we do?
So if you know, that does sound like it could be grubs. Keep in mind that, you know, and I imagine based on those trees that you've had those trees for a while. So the grasses, if they've been there, they've been there year over year over year. And if that's the case, I would still recommend trying to plant the fine fescues in that area. But if they are, because they're the most shade tolerant. But if you do have some grub damage, what you would notice is as you pull back on that sod, it should be able to pull up really easily. White grubs are root pruners, so the plants tend to dry out a little bit faster. And you will, as you pull back that sod, you'll find little white grubs that are the larvae of beetles, things like Japanese beetles and mass chafers. And they have a characteristic C shape, six legs, and they might even have some hairs on their rear end. But basically, the white grubs can be controlled, but they're typical and they're most easily controlled using a preventative grub treatment. And what that means is basically, if you have grubs there, typically you're going to have them there year over year, and you can predict on when they're going to be there. And when to apply that that preventative grub treatment. So that's what I would recommend. But first, confirm that you actually have grubs, because you know we don't want someone going out and applying an insecticide into the environment without actually knowing what it's attempting to control.
Very good. Thank you, Mary, for the call. Julie, this texture mentions that trees in the Maple Grove area, parks and trails, show lots of damage to their bark. Many are white-looking, but bark is removed down to the inner layer, but no signs of woodpecker damage. What do you think is causing this?
Boy, that's a great question. Without looking at the trees, I'm not really sure that I could even take a gander at that one. It may be squirrels.
Could it be deer?
It could be deer, I think. It's interesting if it's like repeated along an entire like a boulevard area. It depends on the type of tree too. I know, John, if you're a hunter, what do you think?
It could be. Just like you said, it could be any number of things without seeing a photo. I would suggest taking a photo and submitting it to Ask a Master Gardener.
Yeah, great idea.
We can identify it a little bit easier that way.
Somebody, the texter wants to send us pics, but our text, we can't get photos.
If you go to our Yard and Garden webpage at extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden and go down to Ask Extension, you can send up to 3 photos, and master gardeners can help diagnose that or determine maybe what's going on. The other thing is in Maple Grove, they may have an arborist on staff or a company that they contract with, and they may be able to answer that question too.
All right, very good. So Julie, Danny, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to that septic question.
Yeah.
For Charlie. So Charlie, we have a webpage called Septic. This is easy to remember, I hope. septic.umn.edu, and there's a section on seasonal care. And a section in that is, what can you do to prevent your on-site system from freezing in the future? And they do address placing a layer of mulch 8 to 12 inches over the pipes, tank, and soil treatment system to provide extra insulation. You could have straw, it could be leaves, hay, any other loose compact. What that might do is you may have to rake that off then as the season warms up, just to allow your grass then to get enough sun and get growing as the weather warms up. So this is really important, especially if you have a new system installed and you don't have any vegetative cover. So vegetative cover is really helpful. Leaving your grass a little bit longer. John mentioned the fine fescues being a good option for grasses, and letting those grow a little bit longer than maybe the rest of your lawn could help with insulation as well.
Good. This listener says this: I have 3 lilac bushes that are budding. What's going to happen to them next week when the temperatures drop? And will this mean for spring blooming?
Yeah, we've had a number of people who have said, hey, my lilacs are leafing out. And we had some late blooming. It's called remontancy. It's when plants rebloom. And we breed some of these remondency into, say, roses, for example. We want them to keep reblooming through the summer. But it's unsettling when you have spring blooming plants like prairie smoke, chokecherry or chokeberry, and penstemon that bloom again. They normally bloom in the spring and then they bloom again in August. We had that out at the Foodscape at the Myers Education Center at the Arboretum. There's nothing to do about it. We can't stop it. It is just a plant reacting to hormones that are activated by sun and warmth, and so we can't do anything about it. Usually it's pretty minimal. It's not the entire shrub that's going to open up and start to bloom. It's usually just an occasional flower or leaf there. I think with the temperatures coming up, it's going to, we might see a little bit of cold damage on some of those buds if they're starting to break. But I think you just kind of have to live with that, and just nothing to do. Don't wrap your plant. Don't try to prune anything off or anything like that. Just hopefully it's just a minimal amount.
Okay. Here's a question we've never had before. How many more minutes of daylight do we have since the winter solstice?
Oh, man.
Well, I tell you what.
Do you know?
We have put our huge resource team that together, and we have, I can't count how many folks we have doing research here, especially on a Saturday morning. Here's what they sent me, though. The increase in day length began slowly immediately after the winter solstice, but ramped up to about 2 additional minutes of daylight per day by late January. Throughout February, March, and the first half of April last year, the day length increased by about 2.5 minutes each day.
Wow.
So there. And
more than I thought.
Yeah. So thank you to our research team for getting
It's still dark
to
in
us.
The morning.
Yeah. It's been dark a lot lately.
Hard to get up.
A lot of cloudy skies lately.
Yeah, a little
Every
bit
day
dreary.
Gets better, though. Every day
That's
gets
right.
better.
I
One day closer
to
spring.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. excuse me. Texter says, what can you tell me about, quote, worm castings? Thanks. I love your program. Oh, what are worm castings?
So typically you can find worm castings on the surface of the soil. And what you're really seeing is you're basically seeing the excrement of worms. Typically those just look like processed organic matter. In many cases, it's a great process for soil because it creates natural aerification or aeration in the soil, which allows for air and water to move through the soil. So generally that is a healthy thing. I mean, many earthworms are actually non-native and can actually be invasive, but generally they're not looked at as being a bad thing, and if anything, they can actually help soils. A collection of plant residues that are on the surface, and that's earthworms taking middens, M-I-D-D-E-N-S, where they're basically covering up their burrow. Some people confuse those with castings, but the castings are the excrement. Middens are basically protecting their hole or their burrow over the course of the year.
Oh, interesting.
Wow, you know a lot about worms.
Yes.
More than I'm finding out stuff about John every day at work.
I'm sure he was connected to our research department. No,
yeah.
No, John does know his stuff as you do, Julie.
Yes,
so
yes.
Hang on, we'll
be the soil scientist.
Absolutely, we have some great help this morning on our Smart Garden Show. Call your question in or text it in at 651-461-9226. 29 degrees in the Twin Cities. We're on our way to 34 with a chance of snow today and tonight. Stay with us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Just a reminder that coming along next hour, Andy Lindis returns. We're going to be talking home improvement. So get those questions in mind. Keep those in mind. And you can call and text next hour when Andy returns for our home improvement show. Again, we're in the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those very questions. Here's one. When should you start tomato seeds inside?
Oh, good question. So tomato seeds can be started In March, they need about 8 weeks to really develop before they can go outside, and that should time it right about Memorial Day or so, when you can get them outside when it's pretty steadily warmed up in temperatures.
Okay. Please talk to me, Texter says, about ants. My lawn has 4 or 5 large colonies of ants, like 6 feet across size. Are they good or bad, and do I eradicate them? If so, I don't want to get rid of good critters in my yard, but they're very very annoying and keep me from planting in certain areas.
Yeah, ants can be. I have one in my lawn that eventually just killed itself, I believe, anyways. Ants can be kind of problematic because they can really change the soil structure around where all the plants are growing, and eventually you'll just see really bare or just dead patches where nothing will grow. As far as a control option, you can use boiling water as one, and keep in mind, you know, you may likely kill the plants in that area, but you can at least discourage or hurt the ant colony itself. There's also a number of insecticide bait traps that work. Those typically are more effective than trying to use a broad spectrum insecticide, but there are baits that are specifically designed to discourage or to kill ant colonies, where the worker ants take the bait back down into the colony, and it harms them more directly. As far as any other control options, there really aren't any. And sometimes, if you're averse to using any of those methods, you can just try to wait it out. But unfortunately, once you get a colony, it's probably going to be there unless you try to control it through some different means.
Yeah, they can be tough. Here's an interesting twist on the seeding. The winter seeding sure sounds intriguing. However, how do you do annual spring cleanup of the lawn without wrecking your seeding?
Yeah, that's also a great question. That is one of the things that you need to be aware of if you are doing that. And ideally, that's why we hope you can do the fall cleanup, if you can get to it, before you get any kind of snow cover or before you do any kind of dormant seeding or anything like that, is just to make sure that your lawn is ready going into the spring. If you miss that opportunity, and you still get a lot of debris, from late dropping tree leaves or anything like that, I would just try to be patient in the springtime if you do end up dormant seeding. Just wait until after you get a little bit more. I mean, your lawn is going to look a little bit rougher, but just patience is going to be the key there, just because you're not sure when things are going to germinate and emerge, and you don't want to disturb any seed that hasn't made its way down or at least against the soil yet. So patience is key there.
Very good. This texter says, I have a magnolia tree with what looks like a scale on the bark. What should I do, and will the tree survive?
Boy, magnolia scale is really detrimental, and it's tough. Scale is really difficult to get rid of. It's a sucking insect that's covered by a protective kind of a cap over the insect, and it will then basically suck the juices out of the plant. And it is ugly, and it creates the insects produce honeydew, which is sticky and clear, and that can create sooty mold, grow sooty mold, and it can attract a lot of other animals or other insects too by the sugary content. So it's tough to get rid of scale. The only thing to do is, if you have it on just one branch of your plant, if it's really isolated, if you've caught it early, you can prune that branch off and just dispose of it, burn it up. However, oftentimes we don't notice scale until it really gets bad. And at that point, you have to use a systemic that will be added to the soil of the magnolia tree and then taken up by the plant and kind of translocated out throughout the entire plant into the branches, the leaves, and the flowers. So it will be something that you will want to do after the flowers bloom, because the flowers are attractive to to beneficial insects, and you don't want those insects to take up any of that pesticide, because it will kill them as well.
All right. A couple of minutes to go in the show. It's moving rather quickly, as usual. I think we have time maybe for one more text. This listener has nine black chokeberries. Two of them have stems that are almost 3 inches in diameter. Should these branches be cut away or on one bush if I do this? There are only about 8 stems remaining. How and when should these be pruned?
They can be coppiced. They can be completely cut to the ground. You can also do some selective pruning and prune some of those out. It does allow for the younger branches to get light and to thrive at that point, too. Otherwise, I guess the purpose is think about what your purpose of pruning. Is it too big? Is it blocking a window? Do you not like the way it looks? And kind of make your determination on pruning in that respect.
Finally, let's give the University of Minnesota website and get to the Arboretum if and when you can. How about that website?
extension.umn.edu. If you'd like to subscribe to our Yard and Garden News, there's you can go to the news and then put your email in, and you'll be getting alerts when we have new information on Yard and Garden, which is a kind of timely publication that is produced online that John and I write for and other educators throughout the state.
And John, you mentioned some seed information coming out too, right?
Yeah, we'll be releasing a new webpage here shortly for anybody who's looking to purchase grass seed, just a little bit more tips and tricks. But you can find an existing page just by Googling UMN or web searching for UMN purchasing grass seed. Should be the first result.
Fantastic. Outstanding. Well, it was great having you on. Happy New Year. I don't think it's too late to wish you a Happy New Year, is it? I mean, it's...
No. Just plenty of time.
6 days in.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Julie and John, thanks so much. Let's do this again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
Can't wait.
Very good. Thank you. Julie Weisenhorn, John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Again, get ready for Home Improvement. Our friend Alex Lindis will be filling in for Brother Andy. Coming along a little bit after the 9 o'clock news break. So get those home improvement questions ready. 29 degrees in the Twin Cities right now. Looks like we're going to have a little bit of snow. 50% chance of snow today. How much? Probably less than half an inch, and about the same overnight tonight. You stay tuned to WCCO. Fog and mist reporting right now in the Twin Cities. It's 29 degrees. Yes, indeed. On this Saturday morning, I am joined not but one, but two good folks from the University of Minnesota. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe are back. We're really going to be talking about lawns and gardens, if you can believe that, on January 6th. Lawns and gardens. And like some folks say, literally, we're going to be talking about lawns and gardens. Good morning, both Julie and John. Nice to have you here on this Saturday.
Hey, Danny. Good to hear you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, and to you guys, too.
Yeah, good morning.
I want to alert John and Julie that last week I indeed finished dormant seeding. Finally.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Yeah. I don't recall. We've had so many questions about that over the last 2 or 3 months. I don't think I've ever seen so many questions on the show about dormant seeding. I'm not sure if people just wanted to hear about it or learn more about it or what. But, John, we finally got in, Julie, some snow covering. It looks like, according to the National Weather Service, we might get less than half an inch today and less than half an inch overnight. But, boy, we need that snow, don't we?
Yeah, definitely.
we're still playing catch-up.
Yeah.
It's a great insulator. Even that little bit helps.
And I wonder too that although the forecast is calling for colder temperatures, maybe more accurately, more average temperatures for this time of year, highs in the teens, maybe even a little below average. But you call it an insulation factor there, and I'm looking around my yard and the shrubs and everything, and I thought, well, it's kind of bare out there. What can happen if we don't get that?
So snow is an excellent insulator. It's mostly made of air. About 90% of our snowfall is air, and in those air pockets, it's 32 degrees. So don't ask me how they measured that. It's pretty interesting. But it actually acts as almost like a poor man's mulch if you don't have something covering your soil. So we really look forward to having snow, and it helps to protect and moderate soil temperatures and protect the roots of plants. Roots go dormant a lot slower than our buds and stems and branches do. So it's you know, it's important to get our snowfall, our regular snowfall. Last year was a bumper crop of snow.
Yeah.
But this year is we're really scrambling for that. So if people, hopefully people have left the leaves on their garden beds and have mulched with wood mulch around the base of their trees and shrubs. And that works great, too. It helps to hold in soil moisture and then moderate those soil temperatures, which makes it a lot easier on our plants.
And, John, I'm thinking if indeed, I mean, we're not getting a lot of snow, at least not this particular week, it looks like. But if warmer temperatures do come back, you know, low 30s with sunshine, and there is some melting, and let's say we see our lawns again, I know we're going to get questions. Can people still do some seeding?
Yeah, the beauty of the dormant seeding is that it can really be done any time between now and when soil temperatures get up above 40 or 45 degrees. So because at that point, that's when you're starting to get germination. But you want to, the whole thought process behind the dormant seeding or frost seeding, as some people call it, is really just trying to take advantage of that natural freeze-thaw cycle that happens over the winter and early spring to just naturally work that seed down into the soil. So you don't have to do any kind of soil disturbance. You're just kind of counting on that precipitation and that freeze-thaw cycle to get really good seed-to-soil contact that's so critical for seedlings to germinate.
You know, you and Julie, John, talk, and I've heard it over years on the show, that as far as soil differences, let's look at the state of Minnesota. How different are the soils, let's say, from northern Minnesota to southern Minnesota? Are there that vast of differences?
Yeah, Minnesota is a really unique state because there's probably about 7 or 8 different zones within Minnesota. I mean, there's probably a couple of dozen different soil types, but there's 7 distinct growing zones for several different types of plants, and one of those factors that's affected those soils is just the climate over the last several thousand years. So that's what's formed those soils, and so as a result, you know, there is some differences, but you know, fundamentally, the air and soil temperatures and precipitation amounts are going to be equally as important to that. But when we're concerned about soil types, most of the time for growing plants, we're most concerned if it's a really organic soil, if it's really high organic matter like a swamp or a marsh, or if it's a really sandy soil. You know, those are typically found in the sand plains. But then much of the rest of the state is fairly consistent in just crudely being broken down into mineral soils, which is where most of our agriculture is at.
All right. Interesting. Here's our phone number. It's also our text number, and you know how busy we tend to get. So if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, now's your chance to ask Julie or John those questions. 651-461-9226. You can call if you like, or just send a text if that's easier. 651-461-9226. Julie, I know it's here we are in January, brand new year. What's going on at the Arboretum?
So out at the Arboretum.
Julie, I know it's here we are in January, brand new year. What's going on at the Arboretum?
So out at the Arboretum, it is still a fabulous place to visit. We have a winter wellness fair that's starting on January 13th, and this is kind of designed to help you find nourishment for your body, mind, and soul all in one place. So we have a wide variety of vendors and activities out there for folks. Also, it's still a lovely place to visit to see plants. We have some really amazing collections. Some of the cedars are looking terrific. We also have paper birch that stands out. You get to see these plants that actually have terrific winter interest, and that's an important part of choosing plants for your landscape any time of the year. You want to have something that's going to be interesting in your landscape throughout the entire year. So that's a kind of a strategy for creating a really interesting landscape. We also have a lot of great indoor plants, too. We have our flower show, but that's starting in February, I believe. So take a look at the website. It is ARB, umn.edu. And remember that you do need to get reservations and tickets. So jump on the website and get those. And boy, enjoy yourself out there. It's really a fabulous place to be.
It really is, and it's very easy to access that website. And it, compared to years ago when it was so busy with, you know, parking and all of that,
right.
So this makes it so easy. I say that all the time, but it makes a big difference with, you know, cut back on the frustration on that level. So it's a great place.
Yeah, less waiting in line.
Absolutely. All right. Tell you what, I'm getting a signal here. We need to take a little bit of a break. Let's invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your chance to ask Julie or John those very questions. 651-461-9226. You can call or text right now. In the Twin Cities, we gained 1 degree in the last hour. It is currently 29 degrees. We are on our way today, probably the warmest day of the week, near 34 degrees. Maybe a half an inch or less of snow today, and maybe overnight a lot the same. Stay with us here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning once again. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions this morning. For Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the University of Minnesota, talking lawns and gardens, and we're getting those very questions via the
All
text.
Right.
But we're getting a phone call, too. Richard is on the horn, I think, calling from Minnetonka this morning. Richard, thanks for waiting. What's your question, please?
Sure. I have a front lawn that's quite thin, at least in half of it, and the winter seeding sounds like a good idea to me. My question is, what specific kind of seed should I use on my Minnetonka lawn?
Great question. So if you have a little bit more shade in the thin area, then I would consider planting something with fine fescue, or made up mostly of the fine fescues. It's a group of five different species of turf grass. If it is just I think fine fescue is great for most lawns, but if you have a little bit more traffic, if it's thin because you have kids or pets or anything like that, maybe you want to consider adding in a little bit of tall fescue or Kentucky bluegrass. But all turf grass species work really well with a dormant seeding. It's just, I would just kind of match it based on what the current site conditions are.
You know, we've talked about the types of seeds, like you're mentioning, John, but John and Julie, what about when you purchase seeds from either big box stores or local garden centers? I mean, we do have seeds kind of that are locally sourced, right? I mean, and we get seeds from all over the country, Oregon, things like that. What's the best to use, would you think?
Well, the keys, we're actually just getting ready to publish a new web page on our website for four tips on how to purchase a great grass seed. But the things to look out for are just to make sure that you're buying actual grass seed and you're getting what you pay for. So we recommend not buying coated seed. You know, buying seed that is just the seed itself. It doesn't have any extra synthetic coating to help it germinate or to help it save water or anything like that. A lot of times those provide little benefit to homeowners. So the thing is just you can go to most garden centers. We do have a link on our webpage on where to purchase grass seed. You could just web search for purchasing grass seed in Minnesota. And we have a link on all of the vendors that we know of that sell premium grass seed, especially the fine fescues or bee lawn mixes. That's a relatively up-to-date list. Again, that's purchasing grass seed, and you can find that. That's actually at the TURF webpage, turf.umn.edu. There's a link up at the top that says just purchase grass seed.
And we have great garden centers that sell great grass seed. I know I've been to a few of them myself. It makes a big difference. Here's an interesting question. Texter says, will mice eat the grass seed you lay down now?
I would be more worried about birds than I would be mice.
Yeah.
And that's one of the potential pitfalls of dormant seeding is that, you know, that seed is sitting on the surface and exposed if we don't get any snow. One thing that I like to do is I like to seed a little bit now before we get our first major snowfall, and then come back through in any kind of thin areas if there's some areas I didn't get to or anything like that, just in real late winter, early spring, in that February, March, if we get any snowfall, or if any of the snow melts and you have some bare spots you want to hit, that's a great time to do it as well.
Very good. 651-461-9226 for your lawn or garden questions for Julie or John. This texter says this: our ground is complete clay, hard as a rock. What's good dormant seeding for that, along with lots of shade, too, they add?
Well, the shade is probably much more of a limiting factor than the clay. Unfortunately, a lot of new sites, you know, whenever they build a new home, they scrape off the topsoil, they sell it, or they move it somewhere else. And a lot of new sites are trying to establish lawn and landscaping plants on essentially the subsoil. So that's a really common problem to see. As far as the grass species, like I mentioned, the shade is a much more limiting factor, and I would be, because all grasses can grow on relatively high clay content, so I would focus on that as a problem, and because of that, I would plant the fine fescues or turf-type tall fescue if you have a little bit more traffic because of kids or pets or anything like that, but the fine fescues are the most shade-tolerant grass that I would recommend there.
Julie, it's hard to believe that here we are in January already.
Yes.
And usually you and I, when we talk, and some of your colleagues, we talk about, well, what are we doing here in the middle of the winter? Are seed catalogs coming out yet?
Oh, yes, they certainly are. So as people are looking for and thinking about the coming spring, be looking through those seed catalogs and deciding, you know, what worked last year and maybe what you want to try this year. So those are always exciting to see the photos, the new varieties and cultivars that are coming out. And be sure to visit your local garden centers, too. As the weather warms up and we get closer to spring, you're going to be seeing, transplants and new shrubs and trees that are available. And talk with your garden center people. I always say form a relationship with your garden center because they can clue you into some of the newer varieties, newer cultivars, some of the research and evaluation that's been done on those plants, and help you make some really science-based decisions.
And couple that along with the University of Minnesota Extension website, and I'm thinking of the times I've looked for trees or shrubs,
right,
and visiting the Arboretum to see, you know, actual growth. Is this going to look good right next to my house, or did I plant that tree too close to the house? Things like that. So there's some great resources, the U of extension.umn.edu or the Arboretum. We'll talk more about those as we move through this hour. Let's take a break, see what that weather forecast looks like for this coming week. Stay with us. Call us, text us, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here and glad of it every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, answering your lawn and garden questions, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M. We're talking lawns and gardens as usual. And Julie and John, we have callers and we have texters both. Let's see how many folks
awesome.
We can help out here. Charlie's first up. You're calling from Kimball, Minnesota, I do believe. Charlie, what's your question this morning?
Yeah, hi. Right now, with the weather as it is, without any snow, living in the country, we're all starting to get a little worried about our septic systems freezing. And what I'm asking, John, is we're looking for straw hay bales to kind of insulate. So I'm wondering what is the least destructive way to distribute that without damaging my grass
in the spring? Should I have put down a layer of plastic before the straw and then the bales, or what would be the best possible way?
Charlie, you're thinking about trying to insulate the ground to keep it from freezing?
Yes, yes. If we don't get any snow soon, then that's kind of a concern around my neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure on how to answer that. Julie, do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think I know that in the past, or John, and you could probably weigh in on this too, but that if as long as there's something planted on the soil, like turf, it actually acts as an insulator for the soil. If you had bare soil on top of your septic mounds or your septic systems, then it would be much more concerning because I remember back in, it was January of 2022, the soil temperature of bare soil was zero, and the soil temperature of the soil with sod on it was 41 degrees, and the air temperature that day was minus 24 degrees. So just having some kind of growth that's on the soil is helpful. Now, I'm not a septic expert. We do have septic experts at the University of Minnesota. So if you visit our extension site at extension.umn.edu and type in septic systems, there may be some information there about septic systems and protecting them from excessive cold.
All right, very good. Good info. Thank you, Charlie. Let's grab another call, then we'll get back to the text messages. Mary is phoning in from Woodbury this morning. Thanks, Mary. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling because in the fall, it seemed in a kind of a patch of our front yard that does have some shade from kind of an evergreen and a birch tree, but the grass would pull up like there was absolutely no root system left. And so I'm kind of guessing maybe it's grub worms, but how do we know? And if so, what do we do?
So if that does sound like it could be grubs, keep in mind that, you know, and I imagine based on those trees that you've had those trees for a while. So the grasses, if they've been there, they've been there year over year over year. And if that's the case, I would still recommend trying to plant the fine fescues in that area. But if they are, because they're the most shade tolerant, but if you do have some grub damage, what you would notice is as you pull back on that sod, it should be able to pull up really easily. White grubs are root pruners, so the plants tend to dry out a little bit faster. And you will, as you pull back that sod, you will find little white grubs that are the larvae of beetles, things like Japanese beetles and mass chafers. And they have a characteristic C shape, six legs, and they might even have some hairs on their rear end. But basically, the white grubs can be controlled, but they're typical and they're most easily controlled using a preventative grub treatment. And what that means is basically if you have grubs there, typically you're going to have them there year over year, and you can predict on when they're going to be there and when to apply that that preventative grub treatment. So that's what I would recommend, but first confirm that you actually have grubs because, you know, we don't want someone going out and applying an insecticide into the environment without actually knowing what it's attempting to control.
Very good. Thank you, Mary, for the call. Julie, this texter mentions that trees in the Maple Grove area, parks and trails, show lots of damage to their bark. Many are white-looking, but bark is removed down to the inner layer, but no signs of woodpecker damage. What do you think is causing this?
Boy, that's a great question. Without looking at the trees, I'm not really sure that I could even take a gander at that one. It may be squirrels.
Could it be deer?
It could be deer, I think. It's interesting if it's like repeated along an entire like a boulevard area. It depends on the type of tree too. I know John, if you're a hunter, what do you think?
It could be. Just like you said, it could be any number of things without seeing a photo. I would suggest taking a photo and submitting it to Ask a Master Gardener.
Yeah, great idea.
We can identify it a little bit easier that way.
Somebody, the texter wants to send us pics, but our text, we can't get photos.
If you go to our Yard and Garden webpage at extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden and go down to Ask Extension, you can send up to 3 photos, and master gardeners can help diagnose that or determine maybe what's going on. The other thing is in Maple Grove, they may have an arborist on staff or a company that they contract with, and they may be able to answer that question too.
All right, very good. So Julie, Danny, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to that septic question.
Yeah.
For Charlie. So Charlie, we have a webpage called Septic. This is easy to remember, I hope. septic.umn.edu, and there's a section on seasonal care. And a section in that is, what can you do to prevent your on-site system from freezing in the future? And they do address placing a layer of mulch 8 to 12 inches over the pipes, tank, and soil treatment system to provide extra insulation. You could have straw, it could be leaves, hay, any other loose compact. What that might do is you may have to rake that off then as the season warms up, just to allow your grass then to get enough sun and get growing as the weather warms up. So this is really important, especially if you have a new system installed and you don't have any vegetative cover. So vegetative cover is really helpful. Leaving your grass a little bit longer. John mentioned the fine fescues being a good option for grasses, and letting those grow a little bit longer than maybe the rest of your lawn could help with insulation as well.
Good. This listener says this: I have 3 lilac bushes that are budding. What's going to happen to them next week when the temperatures drop? And what will this mean for spring blooming?
Yeah, we've had a number of people who have said, hey, my lilacs are leafing out. And we had some late blooming. It's called remontancy. It's when plants rebloom. And we breed some of these remontancy into, say, roses, for example. We want them to keep reblooming through the summer. But it's unsettling when you have spring blooming plants like prairie smoke, chokeberry, and penstemon that bloom again. They normally bloom in the spring and then they bloom again in August. We had that out at the Foodscape at the Myers Education Center at the Arboretum. There's nothing to do about it. We can't stop it. It is just a plant reacting to hormones that are activated by sun and warmth, and so we can't do anything about it. Usually it's pretty minimal. It's not the entire shrub that's going to open up and start to bloom. It's usually just an occasional flower or leaf there. I think with the temperatures coming up, we might see a little bit of cold damage on some of those buds if they're starting to break, but I think you just kind of have to live with that, and just nothing to do. Don't wrap your plant. Don't try to prune anything off or anything like that. Just hopefully it's just a minimal amount.
Okay. Here's a question we've never had before. How many more minutes of daylight do we have since the winter solstice?
Oh, man.
Well, I tell you what.
Do you know?
We have put our huge resource team that together, and we have, I can't count how many folks we have doing research here, especially on a Saturday morning. Here's what they sent me, though. The increase in day length began slowly immediately after the winter solstice, but ramped up to about 2 additional minutes of daylight per day by late January. Throughout February, March, and the first half of April last year, the day length increased by about 2.5 minutes each day.
Wow.
So there. And
more than I thought.
Yeah. So thank you to our research team for getting that.
It's still dark
to us
in the morning.
Yeah. It's been dark a lot lately.
Hard to get up.
A lot of cloudy skies lately.
Yeah, a little
Every
bit
Every day
dreary.
Gets better, though. Every day
That's
gets
right.
better. One day
to
closer
say
to spring.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. excuse me. Texter says, what can you tell me about, quote, worm castings? Thanks. I love your program. Worm castings?
So typically you can find worm castings on the surface of the soil, and what you're really seeing is you're basically seeing the excrement of worms. And Typically, those just look like processed organic matter. In many cases, that's a great process for soil because it creates natural aerification or aeration in the soil, which allows for air and water to move through the soil. So generally, that is a healthy thing. I mean, many earthworms are actually non-native and can actually be invasive, but generally, they're not looked at as being a bad thing, and if anything, they can actually help soils. And sometimes you might find a collection of plant residues that are on the surface, and that's earthworms taking middens, M-I-D-D-E-N-S, where they're basically covering up their burrow. Some people confuse those with castings, but the castings are the excrement. Middens are basically protecting their hole or their burrow over the course of the year.
Oh, interesting.
Wow, you know a lot about worms. More than I'm finding out stuff about John every day at work.
I'm sure he was connected to our research department. No, yeah. No, John does know his stuff as you do, Julie.
Yes,
so
yes.
Hang on, we'll
be the soil scientist.
Absolutely. We have some great help this morning on our Smart Garden Show. Call your question in or text it in at 651-461-9226. 29 degrees in the Twin Cities. We're on our way to 34 with a chance of snow today and tonight. Stay with us. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Just a reminder that coming along next hour, Andy Lindis returns. We're going to be talking home improvement. So get those questions and keep those in mind. And you can call and text next hour when Andy returns for our home improvement show. Again, we're in the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. Julie Wisenhorn and John Trappi from the U of M answering those very questions. Here's one. When should you start tomato seeds inside?
Oh, good question. So tomato seeds can be started in March. They need about 8 weeks to really develop before they can go outside, and that should time it right about Memorial Day or so when you can get them outside when it's pretty steadily warmed up in temperatures.
Okay. Please talk to me, Texter says, about ants. My lawn has 4 or 5 large colonies of ants, like 6 feet across size. Are they good or bad, and do I eradicate them? If so, I don't want to get rid of good critters in my yard, but they're very very annoying and keep me from planting in certain areas.
Yeah, ants can be. I have one in my lawn that eventually just killed itself, I believe, anyways. Ants can be kind of problematic because they can really change the soil structure around where all the plants are growing, and eventually you'll just see really bare or just dead patches where nothing will grow. As far as a control option, you can use boiling water as one, and keep in mind, you may likely kill the plants in that area, but you can at least discourage or hurt the ant colony itself. There's also a number of insecticide bait traps that work. Those typically are more effective than trying to use a broad spectrum insecticide, but there are baits that are specifically designed to discourage or to kill ant colonies where the worker ants take the bait back down into the colony and eventually it harms them more directly. Any other control options? There really aren't any, and sometimes if you're averse to using any of those methods, you can just try to wait it out, but unfortunately, once you get a colony, it's probably going to be there unless you try to control it through some different means.
Yeah, they can be tough. Here's an interesting twist on the seeding. The winter seeding sure sounds intriguing. However, how do you do annual spring cleanup of the lawn without wrecking your seeding?
Yeah, that's also a great question. That is one of the things that you need to be aware of if you are doing that. And ideally, that's why we hope you can do the fall cleanup if you can get to it before you get any kind of snow cover or before you do any kind of dormant seeding or anything like that, is just to make sure that your lawn is ready going into the spring. If you miss that opportunity, and you still get a lot of debris, from late dropping tree leaves or anything like that, I would just try to be patient in the springtime if you do end up dormant seeding. Just wait until after you get a little bit more. I mean, your lawn is going to look a little bit rougher, but just patience is going to be the key there, just because you're not sure when things are going to germinate and emerge, and you don't want to disturb any seed that hasn't made its way down or at least against the soil yet. So patience is key there.
Very good. This texter says, I have a magnolia tree with what looks like a scale on the bark. What should I do, and will the tree survive?
Boy, magnolia scale is really detrimental, and it's tough. Scale is really difficult to get rid of. It's a sucking insect that's covered by a protective kind of a cap over the insect, and it will then basically suck the juices out of the plant. And it is ugly, and it creates the insects produce honeydew, which is sticky and clear, and that can create sooty mold, gross sooty mold, and it can attract a lot of other animals or other insects too by the sugary content. So it's tough to get rid of scale. The only thing to do is, if you have it on just one branch of your plant, if it's really isolated, if you've caught it early, you can prune that branch off and just dispose of it, burn it up. However, oftentimes we don't notice scale until it really gets bad. And at that point, you have to use a systemic that will be added to the soil of the magnolia tree and then taken up by the plant and kind of translocated out throughout the entire plant into the branches, the leaves, and the flowers. So it will be something that you will want to do after the flowers bloom, because the flowers are attractive to other to beneficial insects, and you don't want those insects to take up any of that pesticide, because it will kill them as well.
All right. A couple of minutes to go in the show. It's moving rather quickly, as usual. I think we have time maybe for one more text. This listener has nine black chokeberries. Two of them have stems that are almost 3 inches in diameter. Should these branches be cut away, or on one bush, if I do this, there are only about 8 stems remaining? How and when should these be pruned?
They can be coppiced. They can be completely cut to the ground. You can also do some selective pruning and prune some of those out. It does allow for the younger branches to get light and to thrive at that point too. Otherwise, I guess the purpose is, think about what your purpose of pruning. Is it too big? Is it blocking a window? Do you not like the way it looks? And kind of make your determination on pruning in that respect.
Finally, let's give the University of Minnesota website and get to the Arboretum if and when you can. How about that website?
extension.umn.edu. If you'd like to subscribe to our Yard and Garden News, there's you can go to the news and then put your email in, and you'll be getting alerts when we have new information on Yard and Garden, which is a kind of timely publication that is produced online that John and I write for, and other educators throughout the state.
And John, you mentioned some seed information coming out too, right?
Yeah, we'll be releasing a new webpage here shortly for anybody who's looking to purchase grass seed, just a little bit more tips and tricks. But you can find an existing page just by Googling UMN or web searching for UMN purchasing grass seed. Should be like the first result.
Fantastic. Outstanding. Well, it was great having you on. Happy New Year. I don't think it's too late to wish you a Happy New Year, is it? I mean, it's...
No. Just plenty of time.
6 days in.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Julie and John, thanks so much. Let's do this again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dan.
Can't wait.
Very good. Thank you. Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Again, get ready for Home Improvement. Our friend Alex Lindis will be filling in for Brother Andy. Coming along a little bit after the 9 o'clock news break. So get those home improvement questions ready. 29 degrees in the Twin Cities right now. Looks like we're going to have a little bit of snow, 50% chance of snow today. How much? Probably less than half an inch, and about the same overnight tonight. You stay tuned to WCCO. Fog and mist reporting right now in the Twin Cities. It's 29 degrees.